This election night, C-SPAN delivers something different. Not just the presidential race, but the state races that will decide the balance of power in Congress. No political pundits, no spin, no commercials. Just the candidates, the results, and you. Follow C-SPAN this election night, Tuesday, November 5th, on TV, online, or on the free C-SPAN Now video app.
Today we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello!
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Oh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hip-hop?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.
The Last Word on Today FM.
So you heard Bruce Springsteen there a second ago describing Donald Trump as a man who wants to be the American tyrant. The claim of fascism is one that has been made very authoritatively this week, particularly by Trump's former chief of staff during his presidency, John Kelly, retired four-star general. And there's reference to that in this speech made at the Kamala Harris rally in Georgia last night by former President Barack Obama.
He acts so crazy, and it's become so common that people no longer take it seriously. I'm here to explain to you, just because he acts goofy does not mean his presidency wouldn't be dangerous. The other day, General John Kelly, Donald Trump's former chief of staff, said that Trump told him he wanted his generals to be like Hitler's generals. Now, don't boo. Vote. Now, I want to explain that in politics, a good rule of thumb is don't say you want to do anything like Hitler. You know, that's just good political advice. But it is useful because it gives us a window into how Donald Trump thinks.
Marion McKeown, I'm anticipating the text messages from people saying that even Barack Obama has fallen foul of Trump derangement syndrome. But is it not highly significant that we have dozens of former members of the Trump administration who have come out and said that they cannot vote for this man, and that finally, belatedly, having whispered these type of things, somebody who is as close to Trump as John Kelly was has come out and used the word fascist to describe his inclinations and ambitions?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's, I think we've all become frogs in boiling water with this election. But if this had happened in any other era, where a former chief of staff, a four-star general who held two positions in Trump's cabinet, Homeland Security Secretary before becoming chief of staff, who is a military man to his fingertips, to come out and call his former commander-in-chief to say that he is a fascist and that he would rule as a fascist and he has fascist tendencies, is beyond shocking. To say that he expressed his admiration for Hitler and wished his generals were more like Hitler's generals. And also, let's not forget that Mark Milley, Trump's former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the highest military position in America, in the entire Pentagon, also came out and told Bob Woodward that Trump was fascist to his core. These are military men. They never make statements like this. It is deeply shocking. But what's even more shocking and disturbing is the fact that this has received no traction here. There, not a single Republican who wasn't already opposed to Trump has come out and said, this is a bridge too far, we need to look at this. They've made excuses for him. They've said things like, well, it's already baked in. You know, the voters know this. So in other words, what they're saying is, we know he would rule as an authoritarian. We know he has fascist tendencies and we're fine with it, thanks. That is the message that Republicans are sending. It barely registered on Fox News. I think it got a couple of seconds and the other conservative media as well completely ignored it. In fact, the Wall Street Journal editorial board preempted it the day before with a piece saying Democrats are the fascists, not Trump. You know, so this is where we're at in America, that people are aware of it and they seem to be just fine with it.
What's going on, Larry Donnelly? How is it that you have the evidence of those who served with him, those who were in the army? We've also heard, for example, that he wanted to send the army into Lafayette Square and shoot those who were opposed to him. He has been talking about how he will take revenge against all sorts of perceived enemies, particularly in the media. And then his supporters say, oh, don't take this seriously. I mean, isn't that what happens with fascism? That it is, people just allow it almost to creep up, not really believing that it can happen to them.
Well, I think there are elements of the American psyche at play here, Matt. And that's why, were I advising Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, I would say, let the general's statements speak for themselves. Let what John Kelly and Mark Milley have said, let them speak for themselves, and instead proceed upon the record. The reality is that in American consciousness, being a fascist conjures up elements of Hitler and Mussolini. They don't distill it down to the dictionary definition of what fascism may or may not be. There's no doubt that Trump has exhibited fascist and authoritarian tendencies. There's no question about that. But what an awful lot of Americans will say, well, wait a second, we had 4 years of a Trump presidency. I did pretty good under that. That didn't seem like fascism to me. And the danger for Democrats here is if they start throwing around the fascist or the Hitler labels, as some have started to do already, they risk something very big, because in one sense, they're not just talking about Donald Trump. They're talking about the people who may be supporting him, who may be leaning towards him. And that gets people's backs up. They start to say, wait a second here. Now, we already have a situation where the left is accused of preachiness, et cetera. And I do think that's one of their weaknesses. I think going this tack at this late stage is a big mistake for the Democratic Party. They have plenty to work with Trump's past statements to say, look, he's a threat. Look, he's a danger. Look, there's a problem here. They can make that argument very, very credibly without leaping into what some will say is hyperbole.
Then let's look at what has been done by what is often dismissively regarded by Trump supporters as the mainstream media. Yet I'm sure he's delighted that the New York Post, for example, has endorsed Trump with a front page editorial calling him the clear choice for a better future, which is remarkable, because back in 2022, citing the, quote, eternal shame of January the 6th, the very same newspaper owned by Rupert Murdoch said Trump has proven himself unworthy to be this country's chief executive again. We also have the likes of the Wall Street Journal coming out, also owned by Murdoch, in favour of Trump. The Los Angeles Times has not allowed its editorial board to endorse Kamala Harris for president. Its owner, its billionaire owner, won't allow it to do so. And here's the real dinger, Marion. The Washington Post is yet to endorse either candidate for president, and the speculation coming from within the newspaper is that its owner, Jeff Bezos, wants to prevent any possible damage to Amazon contracts if Trump wins. Now, isn't that the sign of fearing an authoritarian dictator, when you're worried about following your instincts and your beliefs because you're afraid you're going to lose business contracts?
Yeah, you know, it's really quite chilling that already, in anticipation of a possible Trump presidency, these people have become so fearful and quiescent that they are willing to basically roll over and do nothing to offend him even before he becomes president, for fear of the fact that he would take revenge on them afterwards. I mean, Jeff Bezos knows when Trump was president last time, you know, Trump tried to do so many things. And just to get back to what Larry said, while he was president, he wanted to shoot George Floyd protesters in the legs. He wanted to use the military against immigrants coming in. He wanted to do so many things that he was prevented from doing by the people around him, by the generals at the time who were around him. They won't be around him this time. And I think that one of the things he tried to do was he tried to get the U.S. Post Office and appointed a flunky in there to hike the price of providing services for Jeff Bezos for Amazon deliveries. He wanted it to be set up, like increased by an amount that would have cost Bezos billions a year. So Bezos is looking at this, and you're right. And there's also, of course, a Murdoch, former Murdoch guy running the Washington Post now, which is not insignificant, who was appointed by Bezos. And I think that we're seeing this, that there's already an anticipatory fear and an anticipatory willingness to go along with Trump, or to not offend him at least, just in case he does become president and there's a price to pay. This is not democracy.
But then Kamala Harris, is she playing the wrong card here, Larry? I mean, she went and called Trump a fascist during her CNN town hall the other night. And you know, one of the criticisms that has been made of her, that her response to most of the questions is like, well, Donald Trump is worse and would be worse. You know, why is she not putting forward more of a positive approach? And I can see she has published a to-do list of all the things that she would do, like cut taxes for more than 100 million Americans, strengthening Medicare and protect Social Security. And she's put that in the context that Trump has basically a hit list that he wants to do against people with whom he disagrees. But why is she not doing better, putting forward a positive message of what she would do?
It's a very good question, Matt. I mean, let me say one thing first to Marion's point. I think that it is incumbent upon any responsible journalistic outlet in the United States to say emphatically that all that Donald Trump represents a threat to in every step of every stage of the way, and that they cannot stand idly by and endorse a Trump second term. I do think it's significant that the New York Post has endorsed Donald Trump, because it is not just a New York paper. It is the newspaper of blue-collar America, and not just white blue-collar America, but also Latino and increasingly African-American blue-collar America. So I do think that that is significant. But if you look at Harris, and again, this is why I say, Matt, she's just not that strong a candidate. She's pretty good at saying that Donald Trump is worse than she would be, and that's what all of her answers to every question circle back to, is Trump would be worse, Trump would be worse. She struggles with virtually every question that is put to her. And at one level, I don't know why. I mean, if she said things about inflation, for instance, that it has come down in recent years, she has an argument to make, but she just doesn't seem to be able to get those points across. She's given ample opportunity to, and I've watched most of that town hall with Anderson Cooper, and quite frankly, she performed very, very poorly, and he only asked her very straight questions. And it was interesting to hear what Anderson Cooper had to say afterwards, which was that he came under serious attack from people on the left saying, how could you let the side down? And Anderson Cooper said, I didn't let the side down. I put forward straight questions to Kamala Harris, the woman who wants to be president, and in many instances, she just wasn't able to give a good enough answer. And that's the problem. And that's why this thing is a dead heat going into the final days.
Listener says, Matt Cooper always gives his dislike for Donald Trump, which always lets Matt Cooper down. I normally like this show, but you always let yourself down when you misquote Trump. What Trump meant by saying he wants his generals to be like Hitler's generals means he wants his generals to be loyal instead of the disloyalty gang they've shown when he was last in power. Matt, get a grip, mate. Well, mate, I think you've actually made your own point there, that Trump is looking for personal loyalty from his generals. The generals in the army have to be loyal to the United States of America, and they are not personal generals to Donald Trump to do as he wishes. So what you're suggesting, mate, is actually indulging Trump in his fascism. Maybe that's what America wants. We have lots more to talk about, because the fascist Vladimir Putin, I think that's a fair description of the man who's invaded Ukraine. He's become very matey with Elon Musk, as has been revealed by the Wall Street Journal today. And we'll talk to Larry Donnelly and Marion McKeown more about that when we come back after the traffic with Mark Hogan.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
So So let's continue with our countdown to the American election with Marion McKeown and Larry Donnelly. And Larry, the Wall Street Journal today is reporting on Elon Musk's secret conversations with Vladimir Putin, which is interesting in itself, but it's also exceptionally interesting given the way that Musk has been using Twitter, or what he now calls X, and its algorithms to promote Trump's agenda, as well as dancing on stage with him and giving $1 million a day to those who will campaign for Donald Trump. What are we to make of this revelation?
Well, I think it's deeply disturbing at very many levels. The reality is that Musk has won certain government contracts in the United States, but at the same time, he has maintained a reasonably close relationship with Putin and with Russian authorities. And this is because of Musk's version of himself and his view of where he sits in the world. You know, again, he's afflicted with very many of the same things as Trump, that he is this sort of messianic type figure. And yes, it's deeply disturbing that at the same time as he is supporting so ardently Donald Trump's candidacy, that he is still has a relatively cozy relationship with Russian authorities and with Putin. And what it comes down to here politically, Matt, is the reality that this thing is on a knife edge, and both sides are putting out stories and both sides are pushing things that they think can claw back voters into their category. And for Republicans, conservatives, independents, et cetera, for whom national security is a big, big priority, these revelations are not going to sit well. The fact that Trump and Musk are so close, and the fact that he has these ties with Putin and Russia, will not sit well. The question becomes how many of those individuals may say, wait a second here, we're uncomfortable with this and will drift to Harris as a result. That's the question in the context of the election.
Will it matter, Marion, do you think?
I don't know, but I find this absolutely astonishing. And particularly when you look at it in the Ukraine context, that when Russia invaded Ukraine first in February 2022, Musk was all in for Ukraine and he was putting it on Twitter and he was donating the Starlink's his satellite dishes that provide internet service after Russia took out Ukraine's communications. And then he changed his mind visibly to the point where he is now totally opposed to the US funding Ukraine. I was told about a year and a half ago that the Pentagon had to call him up in a panic and say he was basically the communications he was providing for Ukraine were going down on the battlefield. Soldiers were dying and he was geofencing, apparently, which allowed him to say you can have internet as far as here and no further in different military zones. And then they signed a new contract with him. He has far too much power with the American government already. He has contracts with the intelligence agencies, with the Department of Energy, with the Pentagon, defense, all of them. And he also has security clearance, so he has access to a lot of secrets. Now, the fact that he's able to go around, along with Donald Trump, who we also know has been talking to Putin over the past couple of years, has been having conversations with him, that he is going around and Putin is saying to him, can you not give the Starlink services to Taiwan as a favour to me for China so that I can help, you know, to circumvent US sanctions, that basically Musk is helping to facilitate, it appears from the Wall Street Journal, which is no pro-Harris Bible, and that he's helping to facilitate the evasion of US sanctions of their impact by helping, doing him a favour with China. It's just absolutely staggering. Musk is like, and we said this before on the show, he's like one of those Bond villains, you know, the most powerful man in the world. And that certainly seems to be what he aspires to, as well as the wealthiest. His reach is far too far. And the Pentagon should never have been put over a barrel by Musk in the way that they have been. It's very dangerous.
One thing for both of you to finish with. Larry, Trump is going on the Joe Rogan podcast. It looks like Kamala Harris is not going to do so. How much of a mistake is that by her? Because Joe Rogan has an enormous audience, but he's also not an interviewer who pushes back on his guests. He tends to give them free rein, no matter what sort of crap they might come out with. So how big a mistake is that on her part?
I don't think it's a huge mistake, but I think she should have done it. If I were advising her, I would have said to do it, to take every opportunity to reach audiences that otherwise would instinctively repel or be ignorant of what she might say. So I think it's a mistake. In terms of Trump appearing on it, yeah, it's just more more grist for the mill. I mean, an awful lot of people who listen to that podcast will be disposed towards Donald Trump anyway. So I think that works to his advantage. But the reality in the closing days, I think, for Kamala Harris is that she is going to be dependent upon surrogates to a degree we've never seen before in terms of Barack Obama, who she might owe this election to if she wins, but also figures from pop culture and celebrity who are going to be there drumming up the turnout. And at the end of the day, this thing may come down to whether young people turn out and whether women who are grieved at the reversal of Roe versus Wade, whether they turn out in numbers. That's her hope at this stage.
Okay, and just to finish, Marion, just a slightly different point, taking it off what Larry said there about celebrity endorsements. Bruce Springsteen last night, Beyonce apparently was going to appear with her tonight. Who knows, maybe Taylor Swift will make an appearance on her behalf in the next week or so. Could that be enough? And could it be that this idea of Trump momentum is not actually what's happening on the ground, but it's the message been fed in the algorithms of social media feeds on X, and also manipulation of the betting markets, that this may not be the momentum going Trump's way as the narrative is now developing because it's been manipulated?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point and a bit of an untold story. Like you say, all these bets are being placed deliberately to make it look like there's a sort of a psychops operation going on in the social media zone here. I disagree with Larry. I think that she will not owe it if she wins it to Barack Obama, who's only come on in the last couple of days, really, in any meaningful way. I think she's been running actually a very good campaign by and large. I think her message is getting out more. I think that a lot of young people, now young men are going for Trump, which has not happened before in numbers that have never happened before. That is concerning. But I think that she's running a decent campaign. I don't know. Nobody knows what's going to happen and who's the winner is going to be, other than it will probably be very close. But yes, I agree with what you just said there. And I think that she has a lot more to do. Bruce Springsteen makes me nervous. I get flashbacks. I remember Bruce Springsteen on stage with John Kerry, thousands and thousands of people in 2004. Hillary Clinton, same thing in 2016. It doesn't, as far as I'm concerned, that doesn't really make much of a difference. Maybe Taylor Swift, but the rest of them, forget it.
Marion McKeown from The Business Host. Larry Donnelly, who is a columnist with thejournal.ie, will also be speaking at the Rose Fitzgerald Kennedy Autumn School in Brough, County Limerick, on a panel discussion at 4 o'clock tomorrow. Thank you to both of you.
The Last Word on Today FM.